Hey there, welcome Highfalutin Ski Bum Podcast. It is episode 101, and it is your pals Mario and Brian. Mario, what's up?
It's hot down here in Florida, but I'm happy to be doing this podcast. I tell you what, this is the post 100 era we're entering.
Yeah, you made your journey down. You had a nice, safe, successful trip down to Florida.
I got all my stuff this weekend, so I'm settling in now, so it's good.
Nice. So yeah, you along the way, I know you posted some photos and some videos of your adventures. So where was like your favorite spot along the way on your journey?
I tell you what, I like the bar scene in Richmond because they had a nice little club bar scene that I did a little bar hopping. But Savannah, I tell you, is hard to beat. It's a nice, quaint little town, historic. They got a lot of cool bars, and it's a little more relaxed. Richmond's a little more upscale, whereas Savannah's more come as you are. One of the things I found in Savannah is that place called The Jinx, I think I posted about.
Yeah.
Where they're famous for having like these live bands in, but they have good bands that have historically passed through. And I went in and I paid $10 for for the cover, and I got to see like three different bands. It was actually really good. It was a nice show.
That was the post where you said it reminded you of Telluride, right? With Twiddle.
Yes. Twiddle.
I can't believe Twiddle came here, man.
But they had like all the bands had like cult fans there. It was really cool to see. I was like, this is a nice chill little, and it was like during their breaks you could like leave the bar, go to another bar, hang out for a little bit, and then come back. Like it was pretty funny.
Very cool.
Because all the bars are like right next to each other. So it was like a little bit of Bourbon Street almost, you know.
Just classier.
Keep it classy and smaller.
Very cool. Well, I'm glad you made a safe trip down. I'm still up here. I'm still in the lovely Garden State, and we're both getting ready for ski season though.
Yeah.
So make sure you check us out, skibumpodcast.com. If you have any emails, hit us up, skibumpodcast@gmail.com, on the socials, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, facebook.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast. You can see my cool new Air Jordans that I just got today.
I'm looking at those right now.
I was like, yeah, my 12-year-old self loves me for getting those because those are the shoes that I wanted when I was 12. But A, my parents didn't have the money for them, and B, I sucked at basketball, so there's no way that was happening. But now nice. I finally fulfilled a 12-year-old boy's dream. And also, you can hit us up on Pinterest as the Highfalutins or on SoundCloud as Highfalutin-Ski-Bum. And with that, we will start off, as we always do, with the...
It's time for Opray Today.
Opray Today. So, Brian, I am starting out this week with the good old-fashioned Basil Hayden. So,
wait, an old-fashioned with Basil Hayden? Or just
no, the old-fashioned drink for me. This goes back to when I first started drinking bourbon. Nice little Basil Hayden. It's going well today. It's actually hitting the spot.
You could do a lot worse.
Had a long week. It was I was at work. It was one night I was at work till midnight. Another night I was at work till like 9. So it's been a long week. And then I went and did a little training today. So how do you treat yourself after a nice training session where you're shaking after? Have a nice little bourbon.
It's the only way to go, yeah.
How about you, Brian?
So yesterday for dinner, I made myself a nice steak on the grill. And as a gentleman that I am, I like to have a nice glass of red wine with my steak. So I went to the liquor store and was trying to figure out what can I buy for $10 or less for get a decent bottle of wine. I didn't really have the price point set when I went in there. I was actually looking for a particular Cabernet, which is called Wente. Like, I don't know.
If oh, yeah.
Wente. They make a really, really good cab, and it's only like $15, $16 usually. And I found it, and it was $16. And I'm like, okay, I know that I could go with that.
Which one is that? The Morning Fog? Or the, am I thinking they're white? I don't know which one.
I think it's just called Wente, and it's like Cabernet, whatever. Cabernet yeah. Sauvignon. But I found another bottle of wine from another California vineyard. So the vineyard's called the Original Dark Horse, and they make a Cabernet as well. And it got 92 points on from some rating person who I'm not really sure of who they are. It could have been like Tony's Wine Review, 92 points out of 200.
Give them 200 points.
It said 92, and it was $10, so I went for it, and I got two bottles of it. And I like their logo because it's a horse head. And you know how a lot of times horses have different spotting? You know, like if it's a brown horse, you got like white spotting on it. So the logo is like a black horse head, but the spotting is white, and it's a wine glass.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty clever. And you know what? This is decent wine. I like it. Great with the steak, and I'm drinking it now because I know it's going to go bad if I don't drink it right away. So
that's right. Life's too short to not drink the good wine.
It's a bold wine with big personality. This Cabernet is driven by flavors of blackberry and black cherry, supported by firm tannins and a hint of spice, all leading toward a complex finish of dark chocolate espresso.
Is there a little bit of dark horse in there?
Not too shabby. Now, when I was buying this, I had a thought. Now, there's been all these crazy fires happening right now
out in the
California wine country. Yeah, there's like 30 people who've died there. It's like, crazy.
I'm not a doom and gloomer, but like somebody that really believes the end of the world is coming, I'm like, you had like four hurricanes that wiped out like all the Caribbean and parts of the U.S. You had a fucking earthquake, pretty bad earthquake in Mexico. You had all these fires. Like they said the worst wildfires in years, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, crazy shit. Like, what else is going to go on?
I saw a Dynamite tweet yesterday, and it said, imagine trying to explain this to someone in 2006, and the headline was, candidate for Senate Kid Rock criticizes Eminem over rap diss of President Donald Trump.
That is pretty funny. That's something you'd see in like Spaceballs or something like that years ago.
Yeah, like or like Idiocracy. I'm like, that's actually a good point. But yeah, so I got this wine. I'm thinking, you know,
President Camacho,
porn superstar. I was thinking, like, is wine going to just like skyrocket in price now, like California wines because of these fires?
Yeah, they said it burned out like a ton of wineries, right?
I would assume so, yeah.
No, I think I heard that on the news this morning. They said it actually didn't just affect some of the wineries. It burnt them out. I was like, holy crap. So they're going to lose a whole crop. They'll regrow. It actually might come back stronger depending. You hear all sorts of stories about like, you know, fire and what it does for like the ground that, you know, stuff's planted in. So yeah. Hopefully it comes back strong, but that's tough, man. Vines take a while to mature.
It's bad.
I think they say, what is it, like 2 or 3 years before the vines actually mature enough to actually start using them for wine. So it's going to be, it's not just a 1 year devastation where you plant a new crop and it comes back. It's a few years.
So are you saying I should be buying more of this $10 wine? I like it.
Go long on the futures. That's what I'm saying.
Go long. Long on Cabernet futures.
That's right. Buy. Should have been trading today. Cornering the market, that and frozen orange juice, man.
Nukes are cornering the market.
That's right. So, yeah, we could have cornered frozen orange juice too with the hurricanes.
Seriously, right?
I'm telling you, man.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying this wine. It's quite nice. So I guess I should buy a few more bottles if I'm concerned about California vineyards. But yeah, there's Google has on their Google Maps, they have a special kind of breakout where it shows where the fires are. And, you know, if you've never been to Napa or Sonoma, or if you have been out there, you kind of have an idea of the areas you were at and, you know, where you went to visit some of the vineyards. And it's crazy how spread out these fires are. I mean, they're all over the place.
That's nuts. And, you know, the sad part is they're saying, like, there's a lot of deaths from it, too. And it's like, you wonder, like, was it some asshole, like, doing something they shouldn't? Because I remember there was one year where I think it was – somebody was smoking and they attributed the entire wildfire to like a cigarette that wasn't like burnt out.
Ugh, that's so fucked up. Yeah.
I think another year was some kid that was playing with matches or something. And like, it's always like a lot of stupid stuff. And it's like, you know, you're wiping out people's lives. I mean, they showed houses where people were just like going in. There's one horrible story. I hate even talking about it, but I guess somebody was on the phone with their, I think it was their grandmother or their mother that was living in a camper on a piece of land in the middle of the woods or something like that, or they had a piece of land. And I guess the fires came and the lady was screaming, "We're going to die." And they found her body. Like, they were just burnt alive in their camper. I think it was the grandfather and the grandmother or something. It's horrible. I mean,
that's so horrible. Yeah.
I mean, and then the firemen that go out there, it's pretty fucked up. Like, these fire jumpers and the firemen that go out there, I mean, they're really taking their lives in their hands.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, God bless that they're doing their job and wanting to do that. It's really amazing.
Yeah, seriously.
Crazy. Cray cray.
Yeah.
All right, so now that I brought it back down, let's bring it back up. So you got a Cabernet. I think you should buy – I always say if you like a bottle of wine, buy two or three of them.
Oh, absolutely. At least two or three.
Because then you know what it tastes like. And then when you have something, you want to break it out and be like, all right, I know I want this flavor. Then you have that, you know, you have that grape that you want.
Yeah. Agreed.
Agreed. All right. Now moving into some news that we have for the Opry. There is a story that was put out. Let's see who did this. It was local, Paste Magazine. Did this on the surprising evolving sunshine state of Florida craft beer. Now, I can attribute to this. I think I've been talking about it on the podcast for a while, that every time I come down to Florida, especially like the Tampa area where Cigar City is, there's like more and more little breweries popping up. And it's not just they're popping up. They're popping up everywhere. But some of these breweries that are popping up are actually really good. And I'm like, you know, Vermont has this little culture of like really good breweries that they've been known for. I think Tampa, like this area, is developing that as well, which is kind of interesting to see it like in its infancy, you know. But they actually had, I guess, and this comes out of, we had the story last week where you could buy a seat on the flight going to the Denver Great American Beer Festival.
Yeah.
And a lot of this came out of Great American Beer Festivals. They started coming out with ratings on these beers. And the takeaways are like all these, like, you know, beers that are getting highly rated. But this article is actually talking about just the landscape of Florida and where the good beers are. So I'm not going to go through everything, but it breaks it down. And it says, you know, statistically, they're saying between 2012, but they had 57 breweries in 2012 and 195 in 2016. So they're saying that's a 242% increase over the course of 4 years. And that number keeps growing. And they're saying now it's somewhere over 200 breweries in Florida.
Wow.
So, yeah. And then they have some big ones, like Cigar City is one of the well-known ones because they make that really good. I mean, I've been talking about it for a while, the highlight. The funny thing is I had the Great Gourd, which is their pumpkin one, and I was able to get it in Virginia, and people down here can't get it because it's not offered everywhere.
Really?
Yeah. And then Funky Buddha has one. I actually had the Last Snow. I liked the name, but it was like a coconut chocolate porter. It was really good. But yeah, they're talking about Tallahassee as a microcosm. And they're saying there's a lot of breweries that popped up there. And they mentioned a few, but they're, you know, they're talking about just the road ahead, and the road ahead means they're getting highly, it's not just having the breweries, it's getting them to where they're highly, highly rated, beers. So they're saying, we have 10 beers from the Florida Tap Invitational. So I'll do a few of these and then Brian, you could jump in. How about I do three and then you do three.
Sure.
About that. So first one, and I think I've heard of this one, Angry Chair Brewing Company did the Apricot Berliner Weiss. So it's a 3.2 ABV, but it's a fuzzy fruit stone flavors, I guess, with the apricot. They say that one got a really high rating. Proof Brewing Company, Royal Bloodline. So they're saying this is like an intense flavored, velvety, syrupy coffee and vanilla stout, imperial stout. Wakefield, Key Lime Stush, and they said this is one of the most unique looking beers. It's bright green, And it has a delicious tart piquant key lime tang. That sounds actually good.
Interesting, yeah.
I got to look for some of these when I'm down here. I'll send them up to you.
I wonder what kind of beer a stush is.
Yeah, maybe they just made it up. I mean, what the hell?
Probably, yeah.
Key lime stush. It's a new, I figure they did a new process. They come up with a new name, right?
Maybe. All right, next we got the Calusa Focus IPA, a bright citrus-forward IPA that draws upon Citra and Mosaic to deliver crowd-pleasing, juicy, but not over-the-top flavors. Civil Society Brewing Dankstar, an excellent pale ale to contrast with the previous one from Calusa. Dankstar eschews the juice-chasing obsession to deliver a pale ale that does feature mild citrus white wine notes, but mostly delivers some very pleasantly dank, grassy, woodsy tones. Intuition Ale Works, Pample Goza. Intuition takes the classic Goza formula, mildly tart, dash of salt, hint of coriander, and adds a nice twist of grapefruit to it, along with an unexpected element, jalapenos.
Wow.
It is pleasantly refreshing Goza with a nice herbaceous quality and just a hint of heat.
Huh. All right, then we got Ology Stone Fruit Sour. Thoroughly an American wild ale in form, red barrel age offering from Tallahassee, and it has a deep blend of peach and apricot notes. They said it's straightforward, crowd pleasing, similar to the apricot Berliner from Angry Chair, but it's measurably more complex and thoughtful. Then we have First Magnitude Brewing Company, Passion Fruit Sour with Mosaic. Wow. This person writing the article says they had a lot of fruit kettle sours and a lot of hop sours, but rarely given a hoppy fruited sour. So they said it has tropical fruit characteristics of Mosaic, but in harmony with ripe, juicy passion fruit. It sounds wild, right?
Yeah, right.
Then Funky Buddha Mexican Coffee, and I had the porter, like I said, the coconut coffee porter. So they're masters of big flavor beers, and they routinely succeed with concepts of that other breweries would bungle. And here they take the popular flavor profile for Imperial Stouts, Mexican coffee, and hot chocolate, and just execute the hell out of it with a huge body, sweet, spicy. And they said it's everything you would expect from Mexican coffee as a name for a beer. And lastly, but not least, Hourglass Brewing Wild Florida Saison. So they said it's a farmhouse brewed in conjunction with Bob Sylvester from St. Somewhere. So I guess it's a collaboration. And they said they get the best of both worlds out of it. Bright, funky Saison with plenty of fruit, apple, and pear. And barnyard notes. So a lot of crazy concoctions, right?
Barnyard notes. What does that mean?
I don't know. I guess, you know, the barnyard farmhouse ales or whatever. No.
Boot flavor. That's weird.
Boot flavor. Straw. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Nice.
So I got to look for some of these. I think I could probably find one or two of them. I'm going to have to search around for some of the others, but see if we get our hands on them and try them out, because it sounds like some like crazy, you know, mad scientist concoctions for some of these beers that maybe came out pretty good.
Dude, that key lime one sounds pretty awesome.
I know. I'm like, I want to try that now. The Funky Buddha Mexican Coffee, I could probably get a hold of that one. And I know you like stouts and porters and stuff.
There isn't much I don't like.
The Jay Wakefield, I kind of think that key lime one, I kind of think I've seen Jay Wakefield around, but I gotta find that one.
You've got a new mission now.
Yeah. All right. Collected.
Oh, yeah. Then in another story, there were three New Jersey beers named among the best in the U.S. So we talked about that Great American Beer Festival that happened a few weeks ago in Denver. And there were three New Jersey breweries, Spellbound Brewing in Mount Holly, Eight and Sand Beer Company in Woodbury and River Horse in Ewing, who received accolades in the competition that featured more than 2,000 breweries from across the country.
Wow.
So it turned out that Spellbound, they have a porter aged on San Paolo Santo Wood Beer, won a gold medal as the best beer in the wood and barrel aged category.
Wow.
Yeah. And then Eight and Sand, their Bad Hombre beer received a silver medal. I'm trying to find the name of the beer for it, but I don't see it.
You know, River Horse, I've heard of so much. I didn't know they were from Jersey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
They have that one summer beer that's always very popular.
Yeah, I know I will see it, but I didn't know. I didn't realize it was Jersey.
Duh. Yeah. Yeah, they won. Let's see, what was the medal they won? They won a bronze medal in the Belgian style triple category for their triple horse beer.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So, way to go, Jersey Breweries. Well done.
Way to go, Jersey. Beating back the beat.
That's right. Now we're going to take a journey.
Let's get into the Ganjula.
So, Mario, you want to go? You want to start us off?
All right, let's roll us out of the Ganjula. So, Frank's Bean of the Week, back at Beans. Thanks, Frank. Love his comments, and we had a little banter this week. He had some cool stuff going on. But he gave us this week Chocolate Thai. So it's a legendary land race strain from Thailand. Chocolate Thai first made its appearance in the U.S. sometime in the 1960s as Thai sticks, spindly flowers tied to bamboo stick that were renowned for their potent high. So old school heads remember these buds as slender, airy, medium to dark, brown in color with a unique coffee chocolate aroma. But here's the thing. Due to the fact that it was a long flowering plant, and low-yielding cistilla strain that always produced male flowers and seeds were incredibly difficult to clone and grow, it's more likely that the chocolate Thai that they had back then no longer exists in its current original form. So I guess it's been hybridized and rebred over time. But if you do find it, chocolate Thai, they're saying the effects, you get a high, happy, uplifted, medium energetic, relaxed, and focused effect. They say the negatives, high on the dry mouth and dry eyes. Everything else is minimal. Medically, it helps with stress and depression at a high level. Low level, it helps with headache, pain, and insomnia. So not a lot of negatives that you can, you know, dry eyes, dry mouth, but happy, uplifted, energetic, relaxed, focused sounds good to me.
Yeah, not too shabby. Yeah, I remember in like high school hearing people talk about Thai sticks.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, but I guess that's really what that was this chocolate Thai or the something similar to that.
The OG, the original.
So one of our first story, Ganjula, is about California again. And now with these fires that are happening, they're saying that a bunch of these, you know, grow facilities and grow areas are being affected by the fire too, not just the vineyards. But you know, in lieu of that, they're saying that as a top pot-producing state in the nation, California could be on thin ice with the federal government. California produced at least 13.5 million pounds of marijuana last year, five times more than the 2.5 million pounds it consumed. But where did all that extra pot go?
I know where that shit went.
The answers, experts say, is that much of it ended up in other states, some where marijuana is still illegal. The wide gap between production and consumption came to light in a recent study commissioned by the State Department of Food and Agriculture. The new California Bureau of Cannabis Control is scrambling to put regulations in place to begin issuing state licenses to grow, transport, and sell marijuana starting January 2nd. Not a whole lot of time there, fellas. Those rules explicitly prohibit the export of marijuana to other states. Wow. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, it's they are able to produce so much, you know, where is it all going? And
I love how they did the tracking enough to say, yeah, here's how much we grew, and then it just kind of disappeared in the you know, what do we call that, shrink in the retail industry.
We had a lot of smoke it all, didn't talk about it.
That's right. Oh, it burnt.
Yeah.
We had a fire. It all burnt up. That's all you got to say. That's pretty funny. All right, next up, we got legal pot sales in Nevada are projected to raise $120 million in tax revenue. Take that, other states. Take that as a lesson. So I know how Puerto Rico is going to get back on track. You just start growing marijuana and get Tesla in there to make you all, like, solar. You good.
Build the grid, yeah.
That's right, man. So they say July was the first month of legal recreational marijuana sales in this state, and they just announced the tax impact. So this is just from July, the first month. And they're saying all total medical recreational cannabis sales generated $3.68 million in tax revenue. So they're projecting, you know, for the whole year, $120 million.
Wow.
And they're saying the tracking for the next 2 years is even more impressive. So that's just this year. And I guess they're saying it's increasing. The projection is to increase over the next few years. So they're saying between locals and tourists, it's going to add nearly $120 million to the tax coffers. And right now they're saying Nevada charges 15% wholesale tax to cultivators, which goes to schools, a separate 10% retail tax to put into the state's rainy day fund. You better watch that, Nevada voters, because you want to know where that rainy day fund goes. And then they're saying $6.5 million from license and application fees. So that's a huge chunk of business that they've just put in overnight.
For something that doesn't even harm people at all in the long term.
Yeah. And they're saying that's just Nevada. Nevada is small compared to the amount of expected, you know, profit that California is going to get. So they're saying they're going to begin legal recreational sales in 2018. And they're saying they're expecting it to bring about $5 billion in sales each year.
California.
That's fucking crazy, right?
Well, I guess the nice thing about, you know, Nevada and Las Vegas is, you know, all the tourism you have going in that town.
Right. And now that you have hockey, football.
Conferences, hockey, tourism, yeah.
NASCAR, everything.
NASCAR. There's a lot of stuff that gets funneled through Vegas. So, yeah, it's going to be very interesting to see after a full year how much tax revenue they're going to create. I think it's going to exceed expectations.
Yeah, I think between that and California going online, it's going to change the landscape for the amount of people that are using marijuana legally, whether it's for recreation or medical use. I think the pressure is going to be on the federal government to say, well, you got to at least classify it legal federally and then let the states decide, because that's a huge amount of the population.
I just wondered too, you know, is there anything that can convince these just, you know, diehard, super conservative types who want to keep it illegal? You know, is there anything you can tell Jeff Sessions? Is there anything you could tell Chris Christie that would make them go, you know what, you guys present a really good point, we'll try to push the conversation?
Well, unfortunately, what it's going to come down to is voters. You get enough voters to say, look, if you don't like, you know, you don't have to like what the voters want. You have to carry out the will of the voters, and they just vote you out if you're not supportive of it.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, some, but I mean, just like their opinions, you know, not even, you know, what could even convince these people? Like, is there anything?
People are ignorant. They're ignorant to their own, you know, glee. They love it. They love being ignorant, you know?
I think they just, you know, when your livelihood comes from keeping something illegal, why would you ever at least even do the research, even look into, you know, the potential positives of something?
Yeah. Well, some of these egos never also want to admit that they're wrong. So They're never going to go back and say, oh, you know, after looking at the results, you know, I was wrong. They're not going to say that. They'll make up some other bullshit excuse and say, well, because the voters want it, we're going to pass it. But, you know, personally, I don't believe in it. You know what I mean?
We've got an addiction problem in this country.
He's got like a sandwich hanging out of his mouth.
There's a 500 pound man.
Yeah. As he's taking opioids and eating a big sandwich.
Yeah.
Eating some gabagool. Yeah, he just pisses me off. Like, I was talking to somebody the other day, and it was like, so here you have Christie, like, out of all the shit that he's done to Jersey, he's the Jersey governor, and he's still the idiot that was at the Giants were in the playoffs, and he's at the Dallas games, like, sitting in the owner's box with his all Dallas crap. It's like, really? Really, dude?
6XL orange sweater.
Oh, fucking guy.
Yep. Fucking guy indeed.
Anyway, that's the little Christie rant.
Yeah. Gotta have one of those every week. We're voting on a new governor in 2 weeks.
That's right.
Let's get someone who can legalize weed in here.
Yeah. Hey, it means a big deal for taxes. Just saying.
It would be gigantic. Yep.
Huge. Right. Huge.
Next story. Grow raises $2.4 million to build a smart planter for easy to cultivate quote-unquote vegetables.
Nice.
Boxy co-founder Iden Cohen, his most recent stint may have been in the smart TV space, but now he wants to build a box that you can grow some lettuce outside your home. That
might seem
weird, but after many dinners spent feeding guests with vegetables grown from his roof, he and his team now are launching a product, a smart planter called Grow, G-R-O-W. Initially starting as a hobby to grow vegetables he couldn't find in the U.S., Cohen's rooftop garden has now morphed into a startup that's raised $2.4 million in a financing round led by Resolute Venture.
Wow.
It starts at $249 with a pre-sale of $199 starting first. The company then hopes to have an accompanying recurring model where you get seeds and such over the time, giving it a continuous business for everyone that ends up buying a planter.
Hmm. Yeah, I like that.
So it's kind of cool.
See, my whole thing is I kill everything. Every time I grow stuff, there's a very good chance probability that I'm going to kill it because I forget about stuff for like 2 days and then I'm like, oh shit. And you go, it's like dead already, you know?
Yeah.
You gotta take care of your plants. I'm bad with that. I'm trying to grow some stuff out here. Actually planted some herbs just this week.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's so hot down here. I'm like, I can grow herbs all year round just about. I could grow herb all year round. You know what I'm saying?
There you go. And there's some sort of smartphone integration that goes along with this too.
Oh, that's cool.
There's like a microclimate profile. And it kind of gives you advice how to best manage your plants to ensure they end up with something you can actually eat. And I guess the reason why this is in the gondola is because originally, you know, they're saying, yeah, you can grow cilantro, you can grow some cucumbers. But let's be honest, I'm sure half the people buying this are going to use it to be growing marijuana.
They're going to be ready to switch on the drop of a law passed that you can modify this to grow weed.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool stuff.
Very cool. All right, and then last up in the gondola, something that hit just recently, I figured we'll put this out there. Target pulls the hemp oil product that the DEA opposes from online store. So they had a Charlotte's Web high cannabidiol, low THC extract oil in their web store. And I think they have it in the store. I don't know if it's available in the store or through the Target, you know, system now, but they were selling it and the DEA came out and they just decided to come out and say that, what is it? They said they issued a statement, saying that they were concerned about CDB and blah, blah, blah. And because of that, Target bowed down and said, okay, we're going to pull it off of our website and stop selling it. So they say that they announced that Target sold the product, claiming it meant that CDB was going mainstream, and that's why they were jumping on this right away, because you know a lot of people were looking for it, and it's low THC. It's actually okay to buy in certain states, but I guess they had it nationally, and because the DEA came out issuing that statement, I guess they didn't want to deal with it, so they pulled it off of the shelves. Pulled it out of the web store.
Pussy's there at Target is what it comes down to, because there's nothing illegal about CBDs, is there?
I don't think so. I don't think it's totally legal in every state, but most states have actually come out and said it's okay. Like Jersey, you can buy it without.
Yeah, we had the those little Charlotte's Web vaporizers.
Yeah. On the
podcast before, yeah.
Yep. So Target, I guess, just decided they don't want to deal with it. And this is just another instance of the DEA coming out with their opinion and people just not wanting to deal with it. And maybe something has to happen to change the DEA.
Again, it's another thing. You know, why would you ever change anything that your whole livelihood is based on keeping illegal or keeping, you know, sequestered?
Yeah.
It's really gross. You know, it's very short-sighted. It's very foolish. And with the age that we're in now, with the internet and with Bitcoin and with personal sovereignty being taken to new levels, all these old, silly, you know, ways of thinking and ways of acting and trying to control people are just going to become outdated. It's going to be like having a library card. You know, when you have Netflix and Tor and BitTorrent, you know, it's going to be a silly, antiquated way of doing things that is just going to get pole vaulted over by technology and people not wanting to sit around and deal with and listen to this bullshit anymore.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. I love seeing people fight this and to see these silly old corporations worried that, oh, we might lose, you know, $10,000 in sales of laundry detergent due to the Catholic Church not buying this in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, you know?
Yeah. Well, one of the concerns is that other retailers will follow suit. I mean, retail is in the shitter right now, generally. So they're trying to, I guess, tread lightly. But, you know, the DEA comes out and issues the warning in January and says that hemp extracts, including Charlotte's Web, which has been proven not to have THC, is still considered a Schedule I drug. And it's like, well, it's a Schedule I. Like, they're not dissecting to say it's a Schedule I drug because it has THC. It's just like saying I could buy a poppy plant that I guess they remove part of the plant when it's growing to make it where you can't make cocaine out of it. But you could still buy the poppy plant. You could still buy a poppy, you know, just not the one that you can use for cocaine. So why wouldn't marijuana be the same if it doesn't have THC, which is the what should be classified as the legal part of it? If it doesn't have THC, why would you eliminate that? Why would you still classify it as a Schedule I drug?
It's all just control and trying to hold on to something that's slipping out of your hands. You know, They had control over this for so long and they were in power, but that power is just, it's drying up. It's almost like they have this massive grip and then all of a sudden they're getting this huge uncontrollable case of arthritis and they just cannot hold on anymore because people are getting the truth. People are getting real information.
And it's like they have the Death Star and we're trying to attack the Death Star.
Yeah.
Just need one Luke Skywalker to blow that shit up. That's what I'm saying.
We have the blueprints now, though. You know, we have the blueprints. We know how to blow up the Death Star. You know, we don't need to just sit back and listen to this, you know, this rhetoric, this nonsense, this old, outdated information. We have the new information. We have we have the elevated, enlightened information. The true scientific facts. And we're not just, people are fed up. People are sick of listening to this bullshit. People are wanting to get the results they want any way they can. And they're going to go around the DEA. They're going to go around the banking system. They're going to go around it to get what they want in the end.
Yeah. It's crazy.
There's nothing more American than that kind of attitude too. Is, you know, this is put up. This is in our way. We're going to go around and find a better way to do it.
That's right. Yeah. It'll happen. that'll happen.
Absolutely. And you know what? It may take longer than we think. This particular presidency, I think, is kind of not to put a roadblock in the way, but it's more of like a speed bump because it's still going to happen.
Well, I think too, like, you're going to see a change in a lot of governors come up. So I think the ball started rolling and now you're going to see the turnover of governors. And I think that's what's really maybe going to drive some of the state laws that are yay or nay on it. You know what I mean? So maybe there's a little chance for some of these naysayers in the government of the states to actually turn and say, all right, we got to, number one, I want to look like I'm successful coming in and I want the tax money. And number two, people really want it in the state and we've just been ignoring it. So it's time to step up and actually do something. So maybe that'll happen.
Yeah.
Because what would the federal government do if every state legalizes marijuana? Like, what can they do? Are they going to say all the states are wrong? I mean, like, that's going to be a bigger battle once it goes to, you know, like, if it's legal in every state, the Senate and the House is really representing states that legalize marijuana. So why would they keep it federally illegal? You know what I mean? They could pass a law.
Yeah. I mean, and it's really just, it would really just be a power move, a control move, try to keep it under wraps. That's all. That's the only thing they have really on their side is they have a title. They have some sort of office or position they were given, probably didn't earn it. They were probably given that position. And they're just going to hang on to that little tiny bit of power that they have and try to maintain it before it all just completely slips away.
Yeah.
I mean, that's all they can really do because people are fed up and people are trying to get what they need and what they want. And they're not going to wait around and, you know, require this governmental approval anymore. It's just, it's an outdated way of thinking and it's not going to work anymore.
Yeah. I think it'll be from the ground up, you know, states will approve it, enough states will approve it to have the votes to carry it as a law federally, and then it'll change federally. Cause think about it. If you're a state that legalized marijuana, the federal government can come in and screw around with your businesses that are giving you taxes, that you have people legally running shops and getting the product in your state. And now why would you sit around and let the federal government screw around with your state? You know what I mean?
Yeah. The problem is the people who are ingrained and entrenched in the power system have to kind of die off first because they're holding on tooth and nail to that, to try to keep that status quo that they're comfortable with in place. Even though when you look at a state like Colorado, who was the first to legalize, you know, crime is down, tax revenue is up, schools are getting funded, people are getting refunds because of how much tax revenue they've brought in. Really a giant success story that people who are, again, ingrained and entrenched in keeping it illegal do not want to admit. They don't want to admit it. They just want to point out, well, it's too soon to find, you know, to really assess that. Well, how much more time do you need? You know, what results would even get you to consider changing your mind? Would anything even do it? Or is your bankroll so dependent on other companies? Or, you know, are you in bed with the private prison system, with the private prison unions, the policemen's union, the DEA? Are you in bed with them? And are you being bankrolled by them keeping it illegal? That seems to be the only reason why at this point, or some sort of weird religious zealotry that, you know, has been ingrained in your system since you were 2 years old.
Yeah. I just say you got to vote them out. I don't want to wait for people to die off. I say just vote them out.
I think better off, you got to just have a big bonfire, a weed bonfire in the center of town and put that motherfucker's face right in the center there.
Yeah.
Let them get the first whiff, hang out for an hour or so, see how you feel. Is this really so bad?
Yeah.
I think you will think otherwise.
With that,
let's go to Ski News.
So that's Ski News.
Just so you know, during that Ski News music bit, I was on my knees in protest.
You didn't stand. You knelt for that, right?
I knelt for the protest. of the Ski News song.
Man, why you gotta be bagging on skiing, bro?
The Ski News anthem.
All right, so we, even though we had our après today, let's talk about, to start Ski News, the top 10 do's and don'ts of après ski. So we'll start with number 10. This is another list countdown, which I like. So number 10, don't think it's too early to start. So if you think it's too early to start, think again. Start whenever you want to start. There's no rules. Just do what you want to do.
What do you think was your earliest après start?
I think I had a 12 o'clock après start one time, maybe 11:30.
Yeah.
And that was probably, I think that was a Mount Snow or Killington crappy snow day kind of thing.
Yeah, some of those bad snow days, you really got to, you know, go with the flow and be like, you know what, this is not meant to be today.
Yeah, you can't fight the mountain. You just got to go with it and just hit up a little bit early.
Do you remember when we were in Austria skiing, there was like, we had done a couple runs and went for like a bathroom break. It was probably, 10 o'clock in the morning. And there was like tables full of people just getting beers.
Oh yeah, that's what they do in the morning. They're like, let's have a beer.
Yep.
All right, number 9. Do purchase the first round of shots. Your friends will think you're a rock star, and it's the only round anyone remembers. So I'm thinking you're going to get like buybacks the rest of a trip if you're on a trip, and it'll just be legendary. Number 8. Don't take your ski boots off until after last call. We saw this in Ischgl, Austria.
Oh, God.
People walking around at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night, drunk as hell, just in their ski gear and boots, just walking around. Number 7, do substitute a shower with a dunk in the hot tub. That happens all the time. Number 6, don't leave your friends hanging on a shot ski. If there's an empty spot, somebody's got to jump in. Number 5, do take advantage of happy hour discounts. So if Coronas are on special, you get Coronas. If you got food specials, you take advantage of those food specials if you're hungry.
I think our favorite guaranteed discount that we get. Well, we talked about this a couple months ago. There are certain states that don't allow happy hour discounts, right?
Yes.
Now, I think Vermont was one of
them. Vermont's one of them, yeah.
But one of our favorite places, shout out to Sushi Yoshi at Killington.
The Yoshi.
They have between 3 and 6 free wings.
Oh, and they're great. They're like
unbelievable wings.
What are they, like honey?
They're like General So. They're like General So's chicken wings.
Chicken wings, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're really good.
You know what? If you tip the bartender nice, they may chuck you. So if you order a beer at the bar, the policy is from 3 to 6, you get a little, it's like a little.
It's like 4 wings.
Like a side salad bowl size. Yeah, it's like 4 wings. But if, you know, if you're friendly with the bartenders, give them a nice tip, they'll keep giving you wings. You know, they'll give you like a couple buckets of them.
Yeah.
Or the baskets, whatever you want to call them. And they really are quite dynamite.
And they're big wings. They're not like small, tiny little wings. They're good size, and you're having that with the beer.
Oh, they're so dub wings. Yeah, these chickens are probably like, 4'3".
Yeah.
I can bench like 200, like serious chickens.
But it's good. You're drinking the beer, which isn't discounted, but they're able to give you the wings at no price. That's their contribution, It's kind of nice.
Thing, yeah.
So number 4, don't misplace your ski equipment, and definitely don't take someone else's gear. Now, this is important. Logistically, you got to set up before you go to après ski. We do this all the time, Brian. We look for hooks. We look for like, all right, who's putting gear on top of other people's gear? Because you got to make sure you don't miss stuff.
Oh yeah, I have a certain father-in-law who was at après ski and was perhaps partaking in some illegal in some states, but not Colorado. Wink, wink, and lost his skis.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say lost his skis. Kind of forgot his skis.
Kind of forgot where they were.
And then somebody said, "Hey, look, some brand new skis. I think I'll take them."
Yeah.
Number 3, do dance like no one's watching. Because who cares, man? It's your time to shine. Make sure it counts. Bar tops, double as great dance floors. We've seen that at a lot of almost every opera ski we've been to.
You know, again, that's a bigger thing in Europe than it is here.
Oh, man. They love dancing on tables. Any tabletop, man. I've been to like, I was at Hetziara for the the carnival, even Oktoberfest, everybody's up on the table dancing. That's what you do. You know what
I think part of it is too, is that they have the they have healthcare over there. So if you fall and smack your head open, it's not a big deal.
It's survival of the fittest too. They're like, whatever.
Yeah, it's covered. We'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
Number two, don't brag about your day. Don't say the line, sick bro, did you get the shot? Or did you see that pal I got? Nobody else cares. Everybody else had the same day that you had. Just saying. Number one, do enjoy the moment. Because you know what? You never know when Opry is going to come again.
That's very true. You know?
Opry today like there's no Opry tomorrow.
All right, next up. So Vail CEO pledges $58 million to mountain towns. So this was on Vermont Ski and Rides website, and it was announced that Vail Resorts CEO and his wife have given $100,000 to the Stowe Land and Trust. Oh, they also established a new donor-advised fund that will provide grants to mountain communities where Vail operates. The grants will align with the couple's charitable giving priorities and will include significant contributions to nonprofit social service organizations that provide support to the mountain resort communities where Vail Resort operates.
That was really nice. They're like helping out their own resorts by helping out the community. It's kind of a cool thing to do.
Yeah, I think there was just a big concern when you see a big conglomerate like Vail come in and you know, kind of scoop up your local mountain. Like, what is this going to mean? Is this going to change the way the town is, the environment is?
Well, I guess that's the fear, right? They come in and they brand everything with their logo and their brand, and they kill the local flair and that quaintness that the town has, right?
Yeah, that's the big concern all the time. So I guess this is their way of, you know, trying to show that, hey, you know, that's not what we're really about. Let's do it this way. Let's show you how, you know, that we are here to make sure that the towns remain the same and that, you know, we're going to contribute to charities in these particular areas as well.
That's nice. Let's not squash out the little ski shop with the ski shop dog and the guy smoking weed. Let's leave those guys where they are and just make sure the town is set. I like
Absolutely.
That.
I should
shop. We got to do a show all on ski shop dogs. I want to solicit everybody that has a ski shop, send us pictures of your ski shop dogs. That would be cool. We'll do a calendar.
Yeah.
All right, that's the ski shop dog project.
Ski shop dog calendar.
Yeah. All right, I'm writing this down. This is going to happen now. All right. Next up, we have a 19-year-old Montana landscaper is crowned the country's best skier. Sydney Simyard, nobody really knows who he is, 19-year-old kid, I guess, from Montana, crowned the best freeride skier in the country, and he's looking at setting his sights on the world championships. So he just came off of a win at the Freeride World Tour qualifying event in Argentina, and he's looking, he's actually, they're saying he's a phenom. But they're saying he trains in the off season, not by doing skiing or some other stuff. They say he likes to do a lot of climbing and hiking and keep active on his job as a landscaper. So pretty amazing. They have some video of this guy. If you look at the link on our website that's going to be posted, there are some links to video of him skiing. It's just amazing. It's incredible.
Could you hire him to cut your lawn this summer?
Probably, you know what? Probably, man. If he's doing landscaping, that's – I think he should charge triple, though, from now on because he's a celebrity landscaper.
Yeah, right.
You know? I like to hear how, like, these people, like, work out in the off season. They're like, yeah, this is what I do. It's just they keep doing the same thing. You know, they don't mess with it. They're doing that same thing.
Next up, watch a jaguar tow a man on skis to 117 miles an hour.
Damn.
Yes, the good folks at Jaguar decided to.
He did this on purpose, right?
Yeah, right.
It's just tied to it.
Guinness Book of World Records by towing someone in their new XFS Sport Brake, a 380 horsepower wagon.
Damn.
Hooked the lineup to the back and took the guy for a ride at 117 miles an hour. It's a full 47 mile an hour faster than the last record.
You know, they have the guy on the back of that. They're like, all right, we broke the record. You want to stop? No, let's floor it.
Yeah, I wonder how they decided that 117 was fast enough.
I don't think the guy that was getting pulled had any decision in that.
They were to go for like five over the record, right? Yeah, five, sure.
Yeah, don't worry about it. We're going to just drag you around for a little bit. Just stay up.
The guy's like on his phone. He's like texting somebody.
Oh, shit, I'm going 117. Let me slow down. That's awesome. They have video of that too. You know why I'm laughing? Because I'm picturing this being on pavement. Oof. And just sparks going everywhere. Yeah, right. That would be funny as hell. Oh, they do have video of it.
Oh, yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. You almost
Holy
like
shit, dude. This looks terrifying.
Like you have someone drive a boat and they kind of like stop and like whip it around.
Yeah, that's right.
Surprised they don't have like this in the X Games. Like some sort of car pulls a guy on the knees, like just cuts the brake and just like tries to like whip you around.
They should have souped up snow cats on the X Games going uphill. Ooh. As fast as they can with a skier attached. What do you think? Does that have legs?
I don't think it does, but I think we could work with something. You know, we keep working on it and fine tuning it.
Well, it's like we're in Austria and they were doing the motorcycles up the thing. Can you imagine dragging a guy up the hill too? That'd be kind of cool.
It's true.
Just saying. All right, so that actually you got to watch that video because it is like I can picture myself being the guy getting dragged, and it looks cool at first. But then I'm like, that's fucking terrifying.
It gets real, real quick.
That's what it is. It gets real. Yeah, at the point you start thinking like, what if I fall? Once that enters your mind, you're like, I'm going to get dragged for a very long time. Oh, it's horrible. All right, so next up, the latest trend in skiing is renting out the entire effing mountain. So fresh powder is a rare commodity these days, and co-owner of Silverton Mountain, Aaron Brill, is saying there's a reason you've never heard of the resort, which is a private ski club in southeastern Colorado, which limits access to 80 guests a day. The reason you haven't heard of it, because they rent it out to people. So Silverton skiable acres can be yours, for example, for $14,000 per day. And for an extra $900, you get a helicopter and 29,000 acres of sugary backwoods pow. Reservations are available to the public and sell out months in advance. So people just keep renting it out. There's enough people that with that cash, they're just like, yeah, I'm going to rent it out, man. So
that's so cool to have that ability.
Yeah.
Sort of, yeah, financial comfort where you can rent the mountain out for yourself.
It's crazy. Now, Vermont's Hermitage Club, which is by Mount Snow, I believe that's Mount Snow, right?
Yep.
Allows members to rent the 194-acre mountain for a day, and it costs $60,000 for you and your 99 closest friends. I would rather fly them out to Silverton.
Yeah, right.
Silverton's right outside of Telluride, man. That'd be baller as hell. And then Colorado's Cimarron Mountain Club, we spoke about this a while back, has 15 memberships, which cost $3.2 million a piece. And this is where you get a 35-acre slice of the property where you can build your ski home in the middle of nowhere. And this is where they have unlimited snowcat skiing on 2,000 untouched acres.
That's so awesome.
So, yeah, that's like the big trend. I think we looked into, what was there, some ghetto mountain by us that you could rent it for. Which mountain was it? I think it's in New York State that you could rent for like $1,500 for the day or something like that.
Oh, that was, yeah, I think it was, what was the name?
Like $3,000. It wasn't like an astronomical price like some of these, but.
It wasn't Thunder Ridge, was it? It was some, one of those, yeah, like.
Something we've heard about, but not like often, you know?
Oh, you know what? It was Plattekill.
Plattekill, that's what it was.
Yeah, $2,500 a day.
It's nothing. Chump change.
Yeah, right. You end up to 250 people.
Nice little party.
Right?
I was trying to work out. Actually, I did spend some time on that. I was trying to work out the financial way to fund a little ski bum event there. And we would need sponsorship. So we could still break out the papers on that and work it out. But just
if you're interested in sponsoring the podcast, skibumpodcast@gmail.com. Open ears.
That's right. We could give your company top branding on the Plattekill Ski Bum Podcast Open.
Exactly.
We'll have drunken events, regular events, things for the kids. It'll be fun.
Something for everyone, really.
Exactly.
Yeah, that wraps up the old ski news. And with that, we are on to our main topic.
All right, Brian, what are we talking about today?
This week was, last week was the recent shooting in Las Vegas. And, you know, in the light of the tragedy there in Las Vegas and the recent ones in Orlando and Sandy Hook and San Bernardino and on and on and on, we decided to take a moment to remember those who were lost and lost loved ones in those senseless tragedies and have decided to embrace full-on paranoia and come up with a game plan to prepare to just get out of Dodge. But we're doing it with a ski bum twist. Now, if you are deciding to leave and just head out, I mean, most of these events tend to happen in, you know, cities, more populated areas. What better way to go find a little safe house, a retreat, your go-to place than in the mountains? And even better, why not just do it in a ski area, right?
Nice.
And the nice thing about a ski area is, you know, the number one thing, according to, you know, our thinking process is before shit goes down, now you have a ski house. Because
there you go. Got your little prepper
house in a ski area. And while you have that ski house, you can earn money on it as doing it as a share house or as VRBO or Airbnb to pay for the house and all the supplies you're going to need in the future. In the mountains, you usually have access to water, rivers, lakes, snow runoff, food. Better learn to hunt, snowflake. But for now, you'll have plenty of restaurants because you are near a ski town. And you'll be close enough to a ski resort where you can enjoy that as well as making friends with restaurants so you can start stockpiling your fryer oil to make your own biodiesel. And if shit goes down, you can pillage off the resort and the now probably dead rich people whose vacation homes are abandoned.
Nice. Well, and then you get a new house.
Yeah, right. So the things that we were kind of thinking about that are most important if you're going to be self-sufficient, off the grid, having a prepper house, you want to have some southern exposure so you can have proper solar panel installation. Got to have solar panels. Then you want to have like the generator or the Tesla Powerwall to save that energy. You want to have some rainwater collection. You want to have a garden. But for that garden, you're also going to need a supply of starter seeds, you know, for things like cucumbers, kale, tomatoes, cannabis, the important stuff. You're going to want to have some sort of satellite communication so you can access the Bitcoin satellite or other people. And a nice garage to have some dry equipment storage.
Nice.
Now we've known people who've had houses in the mountains. The Mount Snow share house that we had, that would have been a nice prepper house.
Yeah, that was a good layout for it. He had the firewood and a decent sized basement and, you know, cellar area and stuff where he kept the gimp.
Yeah. Gotta have that gimp. That always helps too.
The gimp helps, yeah.
He had the garage and then he had like some, it wasn't totally, you know, there wasn't so many trees there that blocked all the light of the sun.
Yeah, it was pretty close to the resort and the main road, so it was actually a pretty good location.
Mountains, so, you know, you can fight people off if they're trying to come and get you.
right. Well, depending on what's coming, right? So if a hurricane's coming, usually if you're in a mountain area, usually you're not affected unless you're in like, the Caribbean, like Cuba or the rainforest in Puerto Rico. Those mountains get hit with a hurricane. But yeah, no tornadoes, like usually not a lot of earthquakes, depending on what mountain you're on. Unless you're on a volcano, then that's pretty bad. Could be bad.
That's the big negative to Jackson Hole. You got Yellowstone right there.
Yeah, and what's the other one that the ski club went to last year that's actually an active volcano?
Mount Bachelor, is it?
Mount Bachelor, yeah.
Yeah.
That's still an active volcano, so. Yeah, so I guess you gotta watch. But yeah, definitely the having the other stuff, the solar and generators and rainwater collection, that would help. Fortunately for us on the mainland of the US, we are pretty well stocked, even if we have a big disaster. Stuff gets trucked in pretty quickly because it's kind of around, Whereas you get some of the islands that got hit hard, including the Florida Keys, Puerto Rico, the Virgin Islands, even, the other islands not owned by the US that got hit hard. I mean, you have to boat stuff in to get it to the trucks, which you hope aren't destroyed on the island, or bring trucks in. So logistically, it's a bigger deal, But for people now, I think, these solar panels, I actually just ordered some solar, a solar charger that I'm going to send to relatives in Puerto Rico because they are not going to have power for months. So that's unheard of here on the mainland, but I guess if you're on an island, it's I don't understand why it takes that long, but they're saying until January to get power back. But yeah, definitely solar panels are going to help. They may go. That's one of the talks right now is Tesla may try to help out with this, or they might use the technology that Tesla developed for solar to avoid some of the infrastructure problems they're having now.
Yeah, it's a mess down there, but it's great seeing people, like Tesla doing things to try to get them, to build them better from the ground up.
Yeah. I mean, just even as a consumer, if the technology was better way back, then it would be integrated more with those areas, and they wouldn't be as susceptible to a power outage because they'd have some power like generating in their own home,
Yeah. So
So
then the next thing, if we're talking about our little prepper setup that we're going to need, you're going to need some sort of wheels. It's a way to get around. And I guess the two big ways that you could get around, in a, post-apocalyptic or, after a an environmental event happens is electric versus diesel. Now, electric, there aren't a whole lot of truck options. But there is one particular one, and it's the Tesla Model X, and it's got some pros to it. It's electric, so if you have solar panels, you have unlimited power. They have their bioweapon defense air filter, so if anything does happen and you're in your car, you should be good to go for a while. It's the only electric SUV available from the factory. And yes, it is expensive, but if shit does go down, you want to make any more car payments,
Nice.
right? And cons, of course, it's expensive to buy and it's expensive to fix. I was kind of doing some mock-ups of the Tesla Model X that would be ideal for our scenario here, and I found a picture of a regular Model X with the gullwing, the Falcon doors open in the back. And then I photoshopped those like snowcat tracks on the car. And I gotta tell you, it looks pretty damn badass.
Yeah, I like the track system.
Yeah, I don't know if anyone's ever done that to a Tesla before.
Mean,
I
you
tried doing some Google searches and it showed, regular Teslas driving in the snow, but none of them had the cat tracks. So, we're
Tesla,
gonna
you got to call us up, man.
gotta reach out to them and see if they need someone to hook that up and test it out.
Yeah.
Because we would be happy to do so.
Because those tracks you could put on basically any car, they're saying, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
They have two sizes, a standard and an XL, and that's really the only difference.
Yeah.
They fit right in the wheel well, and you just chuck them on.
Yeah.
At the very worst, you'd need a lift system or something to bring it away from the chassis.
That's possible, yeah. But that's something that, you know, a lot of them have accompanying the track packages you get. So then the other thing you're going to need is you're going to, so it's good to have the electric vehicle, but it's also good to have a diesel vehicle. So you might, probably want some sort of pickup truck. And the thing that's good about that is, you know, pickup trucks, diesel trucks are very rugged. You can get into the plow and the winch. So if you have to tow people out or move snow around, it's easy to do. One of the cons, but also one of the potential benefits, is you're going to need to make your own diesel fuel. So the best option is to make biodiesel and have a conversion kit for your vehicle. Because there really isn't much required to make biodiesel. It's just French fryer grease, which is why we said early on is that you should befriend people in town, particularly restaurants, that are getting rid of fryer grease.
Hmm.
And make your own biodiesel. It's that. It's so it's fryer oil, lye, water, and methanol.
Wow! You put meth in there? Damn!
Mix those together. You too can create your own biodiesel and run your car off of it, which is pretty awesome.
And that's to run, and that'll run in a regular diesel engine.
I think there may be some sort of conversion kit you might need, but for the most part, yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Who knew?
You might need guns, of course, ammo, shell reloader, so you can keep using your shells and making new bullets and shotgun shells. And then we found some other interesting just products that people, you know, have used in the past for, you know, people who are survivalists or campers. And we'll put up on the website, and it's, you know, the 72-hour survival backpack, the SAS handbook, emergency water pouches, emergency matches, dehydrated bucket of food, lightweight camping cook set, and fuel for a cook set. So these are things you got to look at ahead of time before it's too late.
I actually, for a diesel car, I think I have a friend that used to be a mechanic, and I think he was telling me that, you know, the diesel you get for your home, if you have baseboard heating, you have a oil heat.
Yeah.
You could actually use that diesel for your car, but you're not supposed to because it's taxed differently. So they dye one red and they dye one green, but that's the only difference.
Oh, really?
So if you're really in a pinch, you can siphon out of your, if you have a diesel, whatever, an oil, if you have oil heat, you could siphon that out of there and put it in your car.
Oh, wow. That's pretty cool to know.
Yeah. I think he allegedly may have done that when he ran out of gas a few times when he was in Colorado. But you're not supposed to. You get caught, you get fined. And every once in a while, people, shady gas stations, would get home heating oil and they would put it in the tanks. They would get caught putting it in the tanks for auto diesel. And it's, I think it's the same. I don't know if the octane's a little bit off, but basically it's essentially the same. You can use that in your car.
Wow.
So that's where you just ride around town, you know, when the zombie apocalypse, and you just go get more diesel fuel through the neighborhood.
That's the move.
That's the move.
So, diesel. Is there anything else you can think of for our prepper setup that would be required?
Well, you definitely have, did you have like the first aid kits and all that other stuff? Because you really got to have, like, shit's going to happen. People are going to get injured. You got to be prepared for that, especially if you have a natural disaster. There's always, you know, not just like bandages, but also like medicines, like for diarrhea, for disinfecting, things like that. Make sure you have all that stuff.
That's where having like a lot of bourbon comes in handy. Because you can either drink it or use it as a some sort of painkiller or antiseptic.
There you go. They also have those smart straws. You ever see those for camping? Where you can put that straw in like shitty, dirty water and you suck out and it comes out nice and clear.
It's like filtered, right?
Yeah, it's like a super filter. Those are nice to have in a pinch. At least you won't get sick from the water. Because there's a lot of stories now with the hurricane hitting and people without water. I think I was telling you before, where you have like, you don't realize like the hurricane kills, animal life in the wild, and they fall into the rivers, and the rivers downstream. Now you think, oh, I'm getting river water and it's clean. It has bacteria from these dead animals that are in the river. It's pretty effed up, when you think
Oof,
about it.
that's so bad. Yeah.
So you definitely want to have a way to boil your water at the very least, if not filter it,
Yeah, definitely.
But yeah, no, I think this is good. You gotta have ways to survive, and definitely maybe something like maybe a solar I don't know, cell phone charger or something.
That could be good too, yeah.
Those are pretty common now. Like I said, I bought one and it's really meant for camping, has two USB ports, and you lay it out and you can actually charge stuff pretty well on it. Like, I guess the solar cells are so much better nowadays that like you get like a, I think it was $50 for like a 20-watt charger. And I guess it gives you 20 watts per, while it's in the sun. And they say what you do is you hook it up while it's not being used. If you're not actively charging something, you charge the batteries, whatever the booster batteries that everybody has, for your phone,
Oh
you
yeah.
just put those on a charge. So you always have something charging. So you just stockpile like whatever you can have to hold a charge while that sun is gone.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Because there's like little things that you don't realize, like, oh shit, I need batteries for it. Like your cell phone goes out and now you can't talk to it. You can't call anybody if you need help or try to get in touch with somebody. So.
Yeah, one thing you want to have too is the people who you want to surround yourself with in your little prepper space. Make sure they have decent survival skills,
Yeah.
like a nursing skills or a doctor, someone who can, hunt and butcher a kill, someone who
A hunter's key. You get a hunter in your crew,
hunting
and
is
that's
very
it.
important. Yeah.
Fisherman's good too.
Fisherman, yep.
Well, I guess, I love the idea that the survival handbook. The one thing I would say with that is read the book before you need it.
Definitely.
At least just a once through, just it's like a good practice so that you know what's in there. Because then you might realize by just reading it once through what you need to have on hand or
What
what to
skills you
look
gotta
for.
work on, yeah.
Yeah, or what to collect. Like you could be out maybe collecting supplies and you don't realize because you didn't read the handbook that, oh, I should grab some of this too in case of XYZ,
Yeah.
So,
Be prepared.
yeah.
That's what it all comes down to. All right. So you, for more information, we'll have some links to a lot of the information we just talked about at skibumpodcast.com. And with that, it is time for
Under the Ropes.
Off, we've talked about one of our favorite new shows. Well, it's been on for a while now, but recently it's become a fan favorite of ours here, Rick and Morty. Now, there was an episode earlier this season where Rick talks about the Mulan Szechuan sauce that McDonald's had out, I guess whenever that movie came out in the 90s.
Yeah.
And they talked about it this season on that episode, and it got so much hype and whoa, so much hype and publicity that they McDonald's brought it back for a couple days or for one day this past weekend. And it turns out it was a bit of a shit show.
Was a total shit show, right? They
Complete and utter shit show, yeah. Fans were losing their mind all over the place.
They said people lined up for it.
Yeah.
They lined up for it, and then apparently, what they didn't tell people was they were only going to have 20 packets at each store of the stuff. So they had lines of people that were waiting for it, and they even said that some of the store McDonald's didn't hold out even before they opened the doors for the sellout, either by having workers' friends or people buy it before the doors even opened. It was all different stories. People were just, they were in a riot. So they're talking about boycotts. There's like a hashtag they started. It's like hashtag boycott McDonald's or something like that.
Oh my God. Yeah, it's fantastic.
All over because they didn't have the Szechuan sauce.
And they say, like, if you go on eBay right now, this Szechuan sauce, it's going for like $400 to $500 for a little packet of it.
And you know, there are people that just got online first to sell it, which is ridiculous.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, there's one right now that's up for offer. It's got one bid of $400 and it's going off in 33 minutes.
And now they have all these memes. Heavy.com has all these memes about the Szechuan sauce.
Oh, God. It's even that good. Like, there's no way.
It's just a plum sauce, right?
I don't even know.
I think that's what it's supposed to be, like some kind of plum sauce.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so there, you know, a lot of people are like, McDonald's was just trying to do it for publicity. They're a bunch of dicks. Like, it was kind of dicky the way they did it. Like,
they're not Rick and Morty fans. They don't get it.
They don't get it, man.
And so, in addition, during this madness, there was another person who offered their car for a pack of this sauce.
That is crazy.
Yeah. Now, again, it's not the best car. But it was
a car.
2000 Volkswagen Golf that they were offered for a pack of the Moulin sauce.
For one pack of the Moulin sauce.
One pack, yeah.
That is nuts.
The world's a crazy place full of crazy people. So, you know, this is right in line with that belief.
Oh, that's funny. All right, so moving right along. Next up we have... people are still tossing pizzas onto the Breaking Bad home, onto the roof of the Breaking Bad home. So apparently, after Breaking Bad, there was one, show where Walter White puts a pizza up on the roof. And when puts it on the roof, and what's happening is, well, he was in a rage and he chucked the pizza onto the roof like a frisbee, and it lands face up and it's just sitting on the roof. So that caused this whole cult following over the years, where people would go in, I think it's Albuquerque, and they would go to the house and they throw a pizza up on the roof. So the people that actually own the house are like, they got pissed over the years. So they said, this has been going on for years and years. So they said it actually got so frequent and so bad that Vince Gilligan actually put a press release out to tell fans to knock it off. Like, it was pretty bad. So there's nothing funny or original or cool about throwing a pizza on this lady's roof. So what they're doing is, the people that own the house, they said, you know, somebody said, like, why don't you sell the house? They're like, well, we've tried selling the house, but to sell the house, we get so many fans that just want to get pictures inside the house and doing shit at the house that they pose as fake buyers. So the open houses turn into a shit show. So they said that's a problem. So now what they're actually going to do is they're going to construct a fence around the property to try to stop people from throwing pizzas on the roof.
I guess New Mexico doesn't have one of those. What's it called when someone like invades your privacy or your home, you can like shoot them?
Oh yeah, right. That's yeah.
I guess they don't have that law there in Arizona, which surprises.
Trespassing.
Or New Mexico.
Yeah, and some of the people are just dicks that go, like, there's one guy that was quoted saying, the crabby old woman told me to go across the street to take my pictures. He said, "Screw you, lady." The one user wrote, like, really? It's her house. Like, she doesn't want you taking these pictures there. But yeah, it's funny stuff.
Unbelievable.
It's like a curse. Yeah, look, I'm living in the Walter White house. Yeah, there's another pizza on the roof.
Yeah, right. All right, next up. Wu-Tang Clan's Ghostface Killah co-founded a cryptocurrency venture. Now it wants to raise $30 million. That's right. Wu-Tang is getting into the cryptocurrency space. Cream Capital is hoping to raise $30 million in initial coin offering. It claims it was founded by the U.S. rapper Ghostface Killah, who is a member of the hip-hop group the Wu-Tang Clan.
Wu-Tang Financial.
That's right.
Nice.
Yeah, it's looking to raise funds through an ICO, which is a method of crowdfunding that has been met with much scrutiny from regulators recently.
Oh, I wonder why.
Yeah. It's now joining a long list of celebrities from Paris Hilton to Jamie Foxx who have put their names behind ICOs and crypto ventures.
Wow.
Yeah. So, Cream, crypto rules everything around me. That's what they're calling it. It's awesome. So, yeah. So, we'll see what happens with Ghostface, the rest of the Wu-Tang, and cryptocurrencies with them in the space now.
Do the Kardashians have their own cryptocurrency?
I think Twatcoin is their cryptocurrency.
Yes, they're starting Twatcoin. Use that for all your buying needs.
Yeah.
I paid my my church tithe with Twatcoin. All right, next up we got from Vice. Give the man who fought a moose with his bare hands the Order of Canada. So the Order of, the Order of Canada, I guess, is a big award, right? So
I think it's like American Idol for Canadians.
That's right.
The Canadians got talent. The Canada's got talent.
Canada's got talent. So I guess this guy, there was a bull, like a moose bull, I guess a male. This guy, Rodney Buffett, and he said what happens is he shot the moose because the moose was around and they can be very dangerous. And moose hunting is essential to the Newfoundland way of life. So he was out there, he's hunting. So he shoots his moose twice and he thinks it's dead. Well, the moose was playing dead, but wasn't really, kind of just faked him out. So he turned his back on the down animal and all of a sudden the moose got up and charged at him. So he was gored with the antlers and then the moose flopped its head back to throw him up in the air before it began to trample him. And he said, despite taking a hoof to the face, he managed to grab the moose by the antlers and drive it away with a few kicks in the head.
Nice.
That's a baller ass thing to do. So the animals routinely demolish cars with their just size, just walking on it and with the antlers and stuff. So, they're saying he was thrown and trampled and he should order it should earn him the Order of Canada or at least simply a lifetime supply of Black Horse, which Black Horse is what, kind of whiskey? Oh, Molson Coors. It's a beer.
Oh, there you go. Because it was Canadian Thanksgiving this past week.
Oh, there you go.
Thanksgiving to our Canadian friends.
Happy Thanksgiving, eh?
All right. And the last story to wrap it up. You know, we always try to wrap up on a weird, gross, or a little bit perverted story. And we've got one for you. So,
this is science, man.
That's right. A third of men and one in five women said they would have sex with a robot, according to a German survey. Data about sexual relationships with robots was gathered by YouGov. The questions about robot romance were part of a poll looking at attitudes to sex. They found that Germans are very ready to try new sexual experiences. One in three men would be interested in having sex with a robot. And women were less interested in the idea, with just a fifth of women who responded to the poll saying they could imagine having sex with a robot.
That's because everybody's looking at the Ex Machina. Was that the girl that plays Khaleesi in Game of Thrones, right? That was her?
Was that her? I don't think so.
I thought that was her face, no?
No, I think it was someone else. I think it was a different actress.
She's pretty, though.
She's very pretty.
I think that's what they're thinking about when they say, have a sex with a robot? Sure.
Yeah. The data about possible sexual relationship with robots was gathered as part of a wider survey looking at German attitudes to sex. I just said that. Among those that responded to the poll, 17% had used role play in a sexual scenario, while 16% had participated in a threesome, and 6% had tried partner swapping.
Huh.
The poll found that 1 in 10 German men believed they were addicted to sex. 2 in 5 said they needed to have sex at least 10 times a month. 1/3 of those polled admitted to cheating on their partner. Many said an expectation of monogamy was unrealistic, with 40% of men and 28% of women saying that humans are not suited to be monogamous.
Wow.
All those Germans.
You know, it's funny. They say 1 in 3 men. That sounds like a big statistic. So that's 33%, right? They said 1 in 5 women. That's 20%. So that's 30 and 20%. So if men don't sound as disgusting in that scenario right there. It brings the numbers back in line with, yeah, that's pretty funny that it's universal.
Yeah, it really is. So maybe we're not that different after all.
Wow. That's some crazy stuff, man. Now, logistically, there's stuff that could go wrong.
And you know what? The robots, though, are getting less mechanical. It's not like it's, you know, like the Terminator robot anymore. It's getting, things are getting softer and more realistic and more human. So
they had the whole real doll brothel, right?
That's right. They did. And they had that Chinese like Airbnb for sex robots.
Yes. Sex it was dolls. Go check in with your sex doll of the day.
It was like City Bikes. That's what it was. Like City Bikes with your sex doll.
Yes, they rent them out. That's what it is. They rent it out. After cleaning, they rent them out, and you take them, and then it's like a sex doll share.
Yummy.
Well, it's the same as the brothel, except you're taking them out. You're not leaving them in.
Yeah. I'm just hoping it's cleaned properly before.
That's just it. How do you ensure it's clean?
That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Yes, so I guess that wraps up the podcast for the week, huh?
Yeah, that's pretty good. We're going to have to start talking about some skiing. I think, which is opening tomorrow? It's A-Basin, right?
A-Basin is going to be opening, yeah. So by the time this gets out into the world on Friday, A-Basin will be open and the ski season will have begun.
That's right. Don't think it's coming soon. That's why you got to start making your plans. You got to, start making plans. You didn't get passes yet. Like, it's not too late, but ski season's here.
That's right, baby. It is here. So we'll get into more of the real ski nitty gritty starting next week. But if you want to keep checking us out and get more information, we're posting stuff all the time, skibumpodcast.com. Check us out on Twitter, twitter.com/skibumpodcast, instagram.com/skibumpodcast. Facebook.com/SkiBumPodcast. We are on Pinterest as the Highfalutins, and we can be found on SoundCloud as Highfalutin-SkiBump. And with that, we will see you guys next week.
Stay high, stay fluting.
See ya.